What's going on, y'all? Happy New Year to everyone. Happy 2021. And let me, this, of course, is the first episode of the New Year of the Block Report podcast. And there's a lot that's going on. Currently, we are reporting on the eve, well, on the day of the election runoff in Georgia. And although the Block Report podcast is not strictly or specifically a political show, we do from time to time report on the environment of politics from time to time. So, before we get into the proceedings of tonight's episode, we want to let you know that you can find the Block Report podcast on Apple, Spotify, and your favorite podcasting platforms. Also, you can reach out to the Block Report podcast via Gmail at theblockreportpodcast@gmail.com. or on Instagram at the Block Report Podcast. So I hope everyone has had a safe and good start to their 2021. And I hope all of you are well. And of course, you know who I am. I am the host of the Block Report podcast, the magnificent TDK, aka Tafari XL. So, let's get into what's going on here. Just a few things that are on my mind. Last time we did touch on a couple of things. Well, I won't say if it was last time per se, but over the last few episodes of 2020, we were touching on some topics as far as in the financial realm, things going on with Bitcoin and Tesla. And Bitcoin is now over $30,000. It had reached a point to almost about $35,000 at its height. And following behind it, like a rocket ship, was Ethereum. I don't know if any of you guys are into the cryptocurrency or are following this, but if you're not, you should be following it, because one of the things that is going on out there is that a lot of people, a lot of people, like educated, smart people, well-heeled people with money. Now, that doesn't always say that they always know what they're talking about, but I remember I did bring up the name of this book, which I haven't read the book, but I mean, it's self-explanatory what the book is about in the title, Follow the Smart Money. So, and it's very similar to, and so that's what's happening, is that the smart money is going, has started to invest in some of this, in these cryptocurrencies, and when people started realizing that it was being, some of the cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and such were being legitimized and accepted among big money, institutional money, some of those credible names in finance, that a lot of people decided to dip their toe into the cryptocurrency as well. As I said, you have PayPal that came and offered cryptocurrency. You have Square that is offering cryptocurrency. If you don't know, this is not an ad for Square, but Square is also offering, they have a thing where on their Cash App, which they offer, where they'll take 1% of whatever you purchase. It has to be over a total of about, I think, $1.50. It has to be more than $1.50 and whatever. But 1% of whatever you purchase, and they'll take that and give you Bitcoin for that. So I haven't heard anyone else mention that. So if you hear anyone else saying that, just let them know that you heard it here first on the Block Report podcast. So think about it this way, like this. You use your Cash App account, cash card, and you make a purchase with the card or do whatever, and they'll take 1% of what your purchase was and give you that amount in Bitcoin. So either way, you'll be in the Bitcoin game, even if you never went and bought any Bitcoin. So you'll have an opportunity to gain with Bitcoin off of your change, which is an interesting scenario there. So far I've seen them, they've been running that promotion for the last 2 weeks. I think it's about in its second week now. So that might be something to look into. What can you lose? Think about it like this. You spent the money anyway, and somebody's giving you something which is apparently something that is representing some sort of value or as an asset. They don't know, no one knows what to, no one in the financial markets quite has nailed down what to call Bitcoin, whether it's an asset class or it's a commodity or what it really is, or, you know, cryptocurrencies hasn't really, I mean, cryptocurrency is the name overall, but they want to know, do they call it an equity, asset class, all of these other highfalutin terms in that financial world. And here it is, you'll have a stake in it too with 1% of your money. So at least if anything out of it, you can at least sell it back and get a certain percent of your money back, given back to you. Of course, Square has fees, but hey, I mean, you would have spent your money anyway and just got whatever you were spending it on and never got nothing else. So if you get the opportunity to get something which has some value to it, even if it's small, and you can get it back, hey, what can you say? But now, and 1% is minor, but think about it. I think it's like you can make purchases every hour. One purchase every hour, and they'll do that, and it's over a certain time period. But this is not an ad about that, so I don't want to get too much into that. So that's something out there, a way for you to get yourself. If you're skeptical, you say, okay, I won't put any money to it, but I'll make a purchase, and some of my money will be in that Bitcoin game. It won't be too much, but whatever it is, and you'll get what they call, I think they call them Satoshis, but what they which is based off of what they claim the name of the founder, Satoshi something or the other, was the founder of this Bitcoin thing, creator and founder. So they call it the Satoshi. But for short, SATS, SATS. Other than that, I guess I didn't intend to start with the finance part in this, which I'm not a finance expert, but I find it very interesting. So, and I'm not a financial advisor, but I find it very interesting. And I feel it would be, since it's something that I'm interested in, to share it here with the folks on the Block Report podcast. So, in addition, what I was looking at here, this was an article. Actually, I saw this information a while ago, but I never got around to talking about it here on the podcast. And I always wanted to, because I believe it fleshed out and showed some sort of information, which some of you may have already kind of suspected, but here we have at least a report from a huge corporation, huge global corporation, multinational entity on their diversity. And I'm going to tie in some other articles and bits and pieces of information along with this to just help further along a conversation, and by providing bits of information so that you can have more of a sense of a conversation. I know a lot of you don't really, if you're listening to the Block Report podcast, I believe that you have a yearning and a want to have information and to be in the know, and not just be in the know about some celebrity or some other foolishness or some hype that they have out there. You might be like me, who you might have reached to the point where you scroll through TV or through your social media and it's just totally, you know, you got to struggle to even look through it because the stuff that people are really talking about, it's not really that enticing. You know, it's a lot of clout chasing. It's a lot of putting on for a camera and play acting and jokes and just stuff that really are not going to help you be your most prepared self in what this new world is coming to and what it's bringing. So, I mean, if you want to just turn off your brain and just coast through life, then this is not going to be the program for you. So we're going to go ahead and we're going to get to this stuff right here. So now, this article here, title is, which is from CNBC. The title is, Tesla publishes its first ever diversity report, revealing leadership is 83% male and 59% white. Now, I know what some of you are saying. Big surprise there. You're not really surprised at all. I get it. But let's go ahead and dig into what the article had to say, and then we'll take it from there. So, key points of the article essentially is that Tesla publishes first ever diversity report. In the report, the company touted a majority minority U.S. workforce, though employees in leadership roles at a director level or higher were 83% men and 59% white. So basically, what they're saying is that when the people that they have in leadership positions are 2/3 white and 4/5 men. So, moving forward, Tesla said it will recruit from historically black colleges and universities and conduct unconscious bias trainings for managers and recruiters. Now, I have a bone to pick with that right there, that last bit right there, because I just don't believe that there's any benefit in training someone with unconscious, this term here, unconscious bias trainings. Because the thing is, if the person is already inherently biased, that's like trying to reform a racist. I don't believe that works. Look how long, let's take for instance, that how many times people say when the police shoot, kill, strangle to death a black person, and then they say, okay, well, we need to do police reform. Has it stopped or reduced the rate of these incidents that occur? What is the measurement of the training, this police reform training? And in this police reform, they're spending money, giving money to the police, and somehow relations with the police in the community are still strained. So how much has that effort been working? Now, I'm going to find a, I'm going to look up here. There was a specific, because I want to give you a piece of information here to add with that. Say that police are, I didn't have this up ready for you guys yet, but I'm going to bring it up in a second. And if not, if I can't get it up as quick as I like for you guys, I will move on to the rest of the article. So here it is. According to PBS, FBI on October 21st, 2016, this is when PBS published this article. The FBI warned of white supremacists in law enforcement 10 years ago. Has anything changed? This is 4 years ago that this article was written. Going on 5 years. Yeah, over 4 years ago. And it says that the FBI warned of white supremacists in law enforcement 10 years ago. So that's 2006. So, to my point of you trying to reform someone who has a bias, but not to, you don't know. You're saying it's a bias and it might be a straight up pure hate. But even in that hate, let me tell you what that part of that is, because yes, that hate, but it's the understanding that given an equal chance, a fair shot, the black man and the black woman would be unstoppable. So let's continue on. And the world is not fair, but the world is not fair. That doesn't mean that, you see, the thing is, that's why people love sports so much, because they say, okay, you're competing, you come with your skills, you got to compete and play the game. There's the game and there's rules. And there's all of that stuff. So everything gets meted out through there. But let's continue. I'm going to read into the rest of the article. And that's why I'm very skeptical. Although, like I said, let me say this too. That I like Tesla as far as I like the stock. I like the company and the idea of Tesla and what it could possibly bring to the society through the electrical vehicle and the battery and all this type of technology and stuff like that. But this statement right here. Moving forward, Tesla said it will recruit from historically black colleges and universities and conduct unconscious bias trainings for managers and recruiters. How exactly are they going to do that? How exactly does that work? Unconscious bias trainings. Anyway, let's continue through the article. Elon Musk electric car and renewable energy company published its first ever diversity report late Friday. It said that Tesla has a majority minority U.S. workforce overall, but 83% of employees in leadership roles are men and 59% are white. According to research by the Boston Consulting Group, companies with more diverse leadership teams report higher innovation revenue. And increasingly, publicly traded companies are required to disclose more information about the makeup of their workforce and to add people from diverse backgrounds to their boards. Tesla's inaugural Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Impact Report offers fewer details than diversity reports from major tech companies including Google and Apple, which began publishing demographic information about their workforce in 2014. However, because Tesla makes cars, software, and energy products, it is difficult to compare with peers in tech or autos. Tesla did reveal some big picture analysis of its current U.S. workforce. Here are some highlights. According to the author, I'm reading the article on CNBC. According to this, the person who wrote this article, here are the highlights. Men at Tesla represented approximately 79% of the workforce, 83% of leadership, 75% of new hires, and 77% of promotions in 2020. Well, if they're 79% of the workforce, you can see. All right, women, I mean, it might be a little odd. It could happen, but you would expect more men to be in leadership, more new hires to be men, more men to be promoted, because 4/5 of their workforce is already men. So that's not a surprise really there too much, I don't think. Women at Tesla represented 21% of the workforce, 17% of leadership, 25% of new hires, and 23% of all promotions in 2020. So this is actually proportional. These numbers which they're putting out here, they seem very proportional. I don't see anything that one could point out to say, okay, a big surprise there. Now, black and African American employees at Tesla represented approximately 10% of the workforce, 4% of leadership, okay, 12% of new hires, and 10% of promotion in 2020. Now, less than almost half the percentage of black and African Americans at Tesla are in leadership of the potential workforce, whereas women is almost 2/3 and better. So let's see how that goes. Okay, now watch this. Asian employees at Tesla represented approximately 21% of the workforce, 25% of the leadership. Their numbers, more Asians. You have Asians represented 25% of leadership, 21% of the workforce, 20% of new hires, and 23% of promotions in 2020. Hispanic and Latino or Latina employees represented 22% of the workforce, 4% of leadership, 27% of new hires, 24% of promotions in 2020. White employees represented approximately 34% of the workforce, 59% of leadership, 32% of new hires, and 35% of promotions in 2020. Tesla counted people from Pacific Islander, Native American, Native Hawaiian, and Alaska Native communities as part of an additional groups category. Employees in Tesla's additional groups category represented approximately 7% of the workforce and 1% of leadership. It added that its leadership cohort, which includes directors and above, accounted for a very small percentage of total employees at under 0.4%. Okay, because it's only counting for directors and above. So that has nothing to say for, you know, you don't know, that's not middle management, that's upper management there. So overall, Tesla's diversity report said veterans currently make up about 4% of the company's U.S. workforce. The report follows a number of allegations of The report follows a number of allegations of discriminatory treatment at Tesla from employees and former employees over the years. Tesla has denied wrongdoing. Finally, in its report, Tesla laid out plans for keeping its workforce at least as diverse as it is today, or making it more diverse and inclusive. So, along with other initiatives, Tesla said it will recruit from historically black colleges and universities, offer an array of new apprenticeships, and conduct unconscious bias trainings for all people managers and recruiters in 2021. So that's Tesla's diversity report. There was a part here as I was reading in the article. Okay. So, you guys got the numbers right there as far as what Tesla's diversity is looking like and such and so on and so forth, and what they claim that they'll be doing to increase their diversity. Now, just they mentioned the reason why that report came up, because over the year, over in 2020, people were, there was a big diversity push, especially since due to the unrest in the United States and in parts of the world, that started to develop after the video of, George Floyd and his murder by the hands of a, so-called police officer, who, by the way, received bail and has not been seen. He's living life. Also, recently, I believe that the young man Jacob Blake, who was shot in Wisconsin in the back, recently prosecutors denied to charge the police officer in that case with anything. So I just don't know. I don't know how this thing is going to go. I don't know. You could pull your gun out and shoot somebody and not get charged with anything. I'm just asking. There is just, you can just pull your firearm, shoot somebody, and there's room actually out there for somebody to say, no, you did nothing wrong at all. Someone that didn't harm you, someone that wasn't under apprehension, wasn't a threat to you. But okay, that's the society that we're living in. I got it. So anyway, we're going to take a short break and we'll be right back with the rest of the program. I'm going to continue with on the diversity and economic track here with another article from CNBC when we return on the Block Report podcast. So we're going to take a short break with the little message and be back soon. All right, we have now returned to the rest of the program on the Block Report podcast. I'm your host, the Magnificent TDK, aka Tafari XL. We started the podcast talking about the Georgia elections briefly, and then we got into Tesla's diversity impact report and other recent events over the past year in 2020. And some of the results that we've seen or latest updates to them here in 2021, especially in regards to events that led up to the unrest in America over the just slaughter of black people in America at the hands of people paid by the state behind badges, and even some people that have been deputized by police to just go out there and operate to obstruct and take the obstruct the lives and the going abouts of black people, armed with the capability of taking their life and not being punished for it. But we're going to go to another article here from CNBC, which was also put out less than a month ago from 2020. And this article was the headline is, "Most U.S. teens believe there is a lack of equal economic opportunity based on race, ethnicity, and gender." Okay, so this is not me telling you that there is a lack of equal economic opportunity based on race, ethnicity, or gender. No, this is not my beliefs, my thoughts, me telling you and what I think and what I'm talking about. Because I know if it comes from me and it's not sanctioned by the mainstream media or by certain of your celebrity folk, that to you, if I say it, it doesn't exist and it doesn't mean anything. And that's for those people that are out there on the, you know, for my people, my real people that really rock with me, I know it's different. But for these other people that are sometimes that are just tuning in and checking out to see how they could try to downplay, degrade, or do whatever they're going to do to discredit, downplay, degrade, or try to discredit what I'm doing or what I'm talking about. Yeah, I know who you are and I know what you're about. So, as I said, the article says, "Most U.S. teens believe there is a lack of equal economic opportunity based on race, ethnicity, and gender." This is an article on CNBC that was published over a month ago, in December 2020. "Teens agree the U.S. has a problem with equal economic opportunity. More than 60% of teenagers said they believe people in the U.S. are paid less based on race." More than 60%. That's 3/5, almost 2/3, ethnicity and gender, according to the Junior Achievement Teens and Economic Opportunity Survey released. The survey was conducted by Engine Insights Online between November 17th and 22nd and asked 1,004 teens ages 13 to 17 about diversity, equity, and inclusion. In addition, 69% of teens surveyed believe people have a harder time getting financial support to start a business due to race, ethnicity, and gender. And 73% believe that racism is embedded into societal institutions such as laws, rules, and procedures. Well, let me tell you something. To see that that is being said and felt by these teens, I'm telling you, they're more perceptive than people give them credit for. And they're seeing the world for what it really is, especially this society here in the United, whatever this is, USA. I was going to say, you know, instead of the states, the snakes of America. But the teens are saying this. The teens are seeing this. And what you have is you have a whole bunch of naysayers and deniers, old buffalo-headed fools, trying to claim, and oh, it ain't nothing, it's no big deal, this, that, the third, and if you just do, ooh, ooh. Going along to get along, lesser of the two evils. I ain't choosing evil. Evil's not a choice in my book. So I don't know how you rationalize you gotta choose the lesser of two evils. That's because you don't have no principles about yourself. You have no integrity. You have as much integrity as a belly crawler. You know what a belly crawler is? A snake. So, let me continue with the article. In addition, 69% of teens surveyed believe people have a harder time getting financial support. Oh, I'm reading this. I'm going to read this again. Matter of fact, I'm going to read this paragraph again. In addition, 69%, that's over two-thirds, of teens surveyed believe people have a harder time getting financial support to start a business due to race, ethnicity, and gender. And 73% believe that racism is embedded into societal institutions such as laws, rules, and procedures. This is not me saying this. These are the young folks. How do you think they come by this then? The results come amid the coronavirus pandemic, which has exacerbated economic issues in the U.S. COVID-19 has disproportionately hit those least able to bear its burdens, especially low-wage workers, people of color, and women. These impacts have not been lost on teenagers. Now, just for 1 minute here, let me state this. When they say that they have these impacts and these burdens that have reached people, and they say it's people of color and women, that's because they just don't want to say black people. They just don't want to tell you that it's hurting black people. But essentially, when they're talking race, when they use the word race, they're talking black. That's black, but they're not saying that. And they have to, because this is the party line to use these phrases and say ethnicity and gender and all of this other stuff, people of color and women. This is the party line to use these words to muddy it up. But if you notice, when they want to talk about getting a vaccine out to people, they have no problem with saying, yeah, we got to get it to the black community. We got to get the black people on board and online with this vaccine. Did you see that woman? The woman They had the nurse. First of all, they had a white nurse who took the vaccine, was out there. Well, she claimed she took the vaccine, was out there talking about it. I think she did take it. I think they had video footage of it or whatever. But anyway, she was doing the press conference, and then she passed out. And that was running around. That footage had been running around. And so that kind of put a damper on the vaccine rollout as far as how that was going. You know, now they didn't really make it look as good as they would like to make it look. And then they had another video of this woman, a black woman, who I believe was of West Indian. I don't know exactly which island she was from or whatnot, but she's out there promoting it and saying everybody need to get the vaccine. And this is all because, yeah, they want to put a black face out there to show you that you should get the vaccine. Now, I'm not saying that you should or you shouldn't get the vaccine. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm just saying I'm just saying that there's certain messages, and you can tell when someone is lightly, or when not even lightly, but suggestively implying that you do something to convince you to get to do it. And you can do this when you have an ability to be perceptive and you're not living in a cloud or in a bubble in your head. But okay, let's continue with the rest of this article. The disparities are starting to show up more so than ever before in the lives of teenagers right now because of COVID and the impact it's having on people, said Yaneli Espinal, Director of Education Outreach at Next Gen Personal Finance. The solutions teens see and who they think is responsible. Now, this is going to be interesting, who they think is responsible and their solutions. Let's see what they had to say. In some ways, the pandemic has been a silver lining in bringing awareness to economic issues, according to certified financial planner Rianca Dorsenville, co-founder and co-CEO of 2050 Wealth Partners. It has forced us to stop living in our bubble. What did I just say? Living in a bubble in your head, right? And see what's happening in other people's communities, in our own communities, and in our own community, she said. Beyond noticing inequality in society, teens have a lot of ideas about what can bridge the gaps, according to the survey. 45% said education was the best way to address the issue, while 35% said changing laws, 30% said business reform, and 23% suggested paying reparations to specific groups to make up for past injustices. I see why they buried this report and only mentioned it one time. No one is talking about what these young people are talking about and saying in this. This is not me saying it. Because I know if I said it, I know what y'all would be on. I know what time y'all would be on with me. These are what the young people are saying. Now, 45% said, now all of these solutions, I say all of them are very good. But education is something. Let me tell you, now, it depends on what they think is education. What is the education going to do? Because the education can, they could be speaking of financial literacy, education on how to, because one, some of the things they don't teach you in school is they don't teach you how to open up your own business. They don't teach you how to, they don't teach you how to handle a bank account, how to get a bank account, how to get a checking account, how to get a business account. They don't teach you about that. They don't teach you about how to do your credit. They don't teach you none of that stuff in school. So if that's the education in that part there, some of that would probably be helpful. Yes. 35% change in laws. Well, change in laws, yes. Some laws, I can see some credit and merit in that. However, and this is going to be my opinion, I'm going to give my opinion, the laws on the books are really not that bad. It's just currently, so as far as how they stand, as if we're going to, you know, all things being equal, which we know they're not. The problem is that the laws are only enforced when it comes to black people. Same thing with the sentencing. When the judge decides to sentence you, they've already done reports on this, the disparity of where a black person and a non-black person can go for the same charge and both get convicted and receive two different types of sentencing, with the black person receiving a harsher sentence. So it's not the laws that need to be changed. It's that the laws need to be enforced equally or not respected at all. Because it's not a law if it only affects one group or one person. That's not a law. If another can go ahead and disregard that law and nothing happens, then this is not a law that the entirety of the society needs to respect. The law is only good as long as all people and citizens are subject to the law. Other than that, the law is not any good. Business reform, I'm not sure where they're going with that. What parts there? They don't really get into it. I would love to know. I don't know if that's more diversity kind of situation or, you know, but the interesting part right here, and I don't know how they had 45, 35, 30, you know, it comes out to more than 100, but I guess however many of them answered this, whichever way it was answered, but 23% suggested paying reparations, which reparations was definitely a word that was thrown around in the recent 2020 elections and is definitely a topic and a subject to which many, many people, you know, in the black community have been bringing up and addressing. Now, as I said, in this article here, they're not really specifically identifying black people, but they're speaking about it without really saying it, because they say 23% suggested paying reparations to specific groups to make up for past injustices. Which groups are we talking about? See, they don't state that. Okay? And which past injustices are we speaking on? So, but since they know that opportunity and all these other things, so you know who they're speaking of. But the article, the author of the article is not willing to push that part out because, hey, for whatever reason. So that's why I say you must know how to read and listen for what is not being said instead of just reading and listening to what is being said. So now, let's continue with the article. The survey also showed that teens think many institutions have a responsibility to help level the economic playing field, including the government, local communities, businesses, schools, and even those experiencing inequality themselves. So I'm not sure here think many institutions have a responsibility to level the economic playing field, including the government, local communities, businesses, schools. All right. So yes, institutions. Okay, I see. So now the last part of this sentence, when it goes to, and even those experiencing inequality themselves, with that, I would take that to be, is they're speaking about the institution. I may be wrong, but I would say the institution of the self, of the person, where even the person has to take responsibility themselves, to level the economic playing field for themselves. So, which that would be in this right here with local communities and those experiencing inequalities themselves. That sounds like group economics to me there. So that's what that is. This generation is going to hold us all accountable, so we have to get ready, said Dorsonville. The article continues, what teens can do now. There are also some things that teens can do now to set themselves up for future success, according to Dorsonville and Espinal. One is to take financial education into their own hands through resources available either in their communities or online. Okay, see what I said? Right there, I just said taking responsibility for self, and that's exactly where they went to. Teens can draw on the wisdom of adults around them by asking what they wish they knew about money or had done with their finances when they were younger, said Espinal. She also suggested that teens follow hashtags about money on social media to start learning about personal finance. That is going to help you become more financially conscious, she said. So financial literacy, I mean, I basically fleshed it out. They're saying it in so many words, but, you know, I basically fleshed it out for you guys. So as I said, I basically fleshed it out for you guys. But one of the things that I would have liked is that these people, like the lady Espinal that was speaking, that is mentioned in the article, that if they could have given more concrete sort of a more concrete direction or resources of information that would have for the young people, for them to go ahead and tap into to get the information that they were seeking, especially on things like financial literacy, how to manage your checkbook or an account, or how to invest and stuff like that. Instead of just saying, just put a hashtag up and then see where it takes you, or follow a hashtag. To me, that's kind of like follow the rabbit down the hole and see where it takes you. I mean, we should be giving our young people much better resources and concrete pieces of information to help direct them in the best direction possible. For instance, myself, I know of that if you go and you get an account with E-Trade, for example, that they have resources where they have webinars that they give weekly, and you can sign up for the webinar and you can learn about stocks, options, financial planning, investing, plan for retirement, and such like that. So that would be one place you could go to basically to try to get to learn some of this information. Also, maybe as a young teenager, 13 to 17, it's possible that you may or may not, without your parents' assist, get an account with E-Trade. But you could also try to look on their website and pick up as much information as you can. And because maybe some people might not be able to get a mentor, or, you know, it's hard, especially now under this COVID thing, meeting people in person and such is kind of difficult. And I think that was maybe that's one of the reasons why they're saying use the hashtag or whatever. But as I said, you know, you could try that if you like to, but I would say try reaching out to some of these financial institutions and see if there's any resources that they could provide you with and lead you to
that might be a good way to do it as well. So I would just hope that there would be better resources and of information and concrete direction for the young people out there. Anyway, guys, this is the end of the program. Thank you for tuning in and checking in with me as I host the program. And, of course, we appreciate you guys. Of course, we want to let you know that you can find the podcast, once again, on Apple, Spotify, and all. A lot of your favorite podcasting platforms. And you can find us at The Block Report Podcast on Instagram and email us at theblockreportpodcast@gmail.com. We're going to close out the program tonight. And I just want to say to you that we try our hardest and our best to provide you with news you can use, news to help you win and not lose. And this is from The Block Report. We're reporting live from the block, for the block, building ourselves up block by block on The Block Report Podcast. Tune in next time. Peace.